Music touches us all at an early age. Not long after we take our first steps, that's when we start dancing. And every child sings before they even learn to talk. At first, it's cute. And then at some point, the grown-ups start telling us to hush, be quiet, don't make so much noise. Some of those kids who didn't listen to the grown-ups become rock singers.
This is Talking Singing by Ron Keel, a presentation of RFK Media.
Certainly, one of the purest, strongest, and most beautiful voices in modern hard rock belongs to Tony Harnell. As the lead vocalist of TNT, an established solo artist, and a valued contributor to many other projects, Tony is a true master of his instrument. He shared with me some fascinating insights into his upbringing and his vocal philosophy.
You know, I have a vocal course that I launched during the pandemic. It's called the Rock Singer Society, and the introduction, it's called The Fundamentals of Rock Singing and the Introduction to the Scream. And, you know, I've been working one-on-one with singers for 30 years, and I talked to them a lot about listening. And I started to, as I was putting the course together, and also when I work with other singers, I had to go back way before Don Lawrence and figure out, like, what did I do? What was my method of, like, sort of getting myself to where I got myself to? A lot of it was luck. My mom, you know, probably being in the womb when she was, you know, going for her vocal lessons and just picking up stuff, you know, and then I'd be sort of, I was like a backstage opera brat, and they'd throw costumes on me and throw me on stage, you know. I was just around music, and I was around all music. My mom at home had Beatle records, and my aunt was a little younger, and she turned me on to Zeppelin and Creedence Clearwater and other stuff that my mom didn't play. So I had a really good education of classical music and pop music and rock. So all of that combined, and just, you know, I don't know, I had this intense listening thing that I started doing from a very young age. I mean, 5 years old, I'd be sitting on the floor intently listening to Glen Campbell records and could sing every song, knew every word, used to have little mini performances for the family, you know. But it's all about listening. And that's kind of like the first thing that I sort of went back and realized was how well you listen really contributes to how well you do your instrument, whether it's guitar, vocals, or whatever we're talking about.
Tony, you have some strong testimonials on your website, therocksinger.com. Strong praise from other singers like James LaBrie from Dream Theater, Miles Kennedy, and Jamie Vendera, voice guru, author, breaker of glass. I know Jamie Vendera through our mutual mentor, the legendary Elizabeth Sabine. Her method, which she adapted from Italian singer and coach Robert Mazzarella, is built upon generating power from your core and not using so much breath to achieve what we call connected tone. And your voice definitely falls into that connected category.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because Don, I had gotten myself to a certain point and was singing professionally at 17, and I had gotten myself to a place where, from singing a lot of different material and cover in my first cover band, that I started to understand that I had some weaknesses I wanted to fix. So for my 18th birthday, my mom found Don Lawrence. She had already started going to him to start to learn how to sing pop music better because her opera training was very different. And she just found him randomly in the famous Village Voice in New York City, and she loved him. And so for my 18th birthday, she got me a bunch of lessons, and that was my foundation. And I've never stopped studying with him. I just have started doing refresher, you know, lessons with him. And I always emphasize that to all the singers I work with. It's like, don't tell me, oh, you know, I've heard that before, I've learned that before. There's nothing new that I sort of learn per se when I go back for refreshers with Don. I'm just putting everything back into place because, you know, over time we develop habits and kind of get off base a little bit. And he pulls me back in and just, it's like tuning up a car, you know, just tuning the voice up.
Tony Harnell's voice, music, vocal coaching, and more can be found online at TonyHarnell.com. John Waite has struck gold and platinum with The Babies, Bad English, and as a solo artist. He's got one of those voices that everyone recognizes instantly, and I sure enjoyed talking singing with John Waite. And the song with Nine Lives, Missing You, got yet another treatment when you released it as a duet with Alison Krauss. Great version, man. Alison, she's known for that soft, breathy voice. And you got the big, strong rock tone, man. Did you have to lay back a little bit on that session to lessen the contrast?
Yeah, I did. I met Alison. It was a big deal for me. I've always been a fan. And she's beautiful. And, you know, it was like, wow. You know, okay, I'm going to work with Alison. So we could, in the afternoon, we met and shook hands, and it was all shy and kind of sweet.
Yeah.
And we could it. And I went home, and I thought, this isn't right. You know, I'm singing it like I'm on stage somewhere to 10,000 people, and she's singing it like it's in the kitchen, you know, like a very intimate conversation. So I rang her up and said, can we do it again? You know, I think I've missed it. It's me. And if I do my part, we're going to have to do it together so we understand the energy, you know. And she came back the next day, no problem. We sang it. And almost within 20 minutes, it was done. And it was just, I mean, it just blew me out of the water. But that's the thing about, like, not having the ego, like, you know, look at me, I'm a singer. It was like, what does the song mean? And if you do it as a duet, it's a heartbreaking song. And there's nobody in the world could have brought what Alison brought to it other than Alison. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, you should be. I was struck when I heard it for the first time. And, of course, you're listening to a duet, and you're expecting to hear her voice, then John's voice. And when's he coming in? When's she coming in? And when you come in at that second verse, it's just magic, man. The two voices are beautiful together. One important trait of a great vocalist, John, is that as soon as you hear it, you know who's singing, right? And you have a very unique and unique and individual tone. Man, you can always hear a John Waite song on the radio and you know exactly who that is. How much of that voice is a God-given natural talent, and how much of it is training, practice, hard work, and experience?
Oh, no. There's no training.
Yeah?
Life is the training. No, it is. I never warm up. I still smoke like 3 cigarettes a day. I can't kick it. I don't take it that seriously. It's like, you know, when you go to the mic on stage, everything else disappears.
Yeah.
It's like somebody's grabbed you by the throat and you're grabbing them by the throat. And it's like really serious. And I have no idea where it comes from. It's focus, really. It's like, if you treat it like a conversation, even when you're singing full out, it should be, you know. I mean, there's a style of singing in arena rock where it's all vibrato and people hitting dog notes and stuff. And it's just like, get the fuck out. You know, it's just like, you know, no. But people, you don't get that in country, thank God. You know, but you do get it in classic rock. And that's where my roots, probably more. Keith Reed from Procol Harum, they were interviewing him about me because we'd worked together, and he said I was almost like a country singer. And I thought that was a really huge compliment, because it isn't like singing for the sake of singing. It's kind of putting something across that's, you know, I hate to say life and death, but it's that serious. It's like, this is me. Who are you? You know, do you hear me? Do we understand each other? This is me, naked. This is it. And that's a big thing, especially in front of 5,000 people. But I mean, without that, it's nothing. It's just product.
I thought you hit the nail on the head when you said it's like a conversation. I was going to ask about your phrasing, because that's a unique trait of John Waite's vocal delivery, is that phrasing. And that's where it comes from, man. It's like having a conversation with the listener.
Yeah, I've never imitated any other singer. I remember when I was about 17, I heard Paul Rogers for the first time, and I thought, aha, you know, he's listening to the same stuff I'm listening to. But I sang like that when I was a little kid. But maybe that comes from that country and western phrasing. You know, Ghost Riders in the Sky, you know, Big Iron, Hanging Tree, El Paso. Maybe there isn't any difference. I saw Marty Robbins doing on YouTube. I saw him singing El Paso the other day, and it was just like, man.
Wow.
He's got this little guitar and a cowboy hat and a cowboy mustache, and he goes, in El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. And it's completely believable. And I think it isn't like arena rocker. It's just like, it's the truth. It's the song. The song is maybe more important than the voice, you know?
Wow. And I just got John Waite to sing Marty Robbins on my radio show. How cool was that? That's fantastic, man. I've got Jeff Tate on the line, unquestionably one of the greatest rock singers of all time. And I mean that with all sincerity, not blowing smoke. And I ask this question, Jeff, of all of my favorite singers when I do an interview. How much of that voice is natural talent, and how much of it is training or method or technique that you might have learned in your formative years?
Wow, good question. I don't know if I even can answer that. Because I started when I was so young, you know, in my, you know, teenage years, you know. And I'm 60 now, so a lot of time has gone by. I was in band, you know, growing up, starting at 9 years old, all the way up out of high school, and I was the keyboard player in all my bands until my lead singer in my band suddenly had to move out of the state with his family. And me and my band were sitting around the rehearsal one day, and we were all, you know, kind of bummed out because we didn't have a singer anymore. And we were playing around with some riffs and playing some songs, and I just started singing this Rush song that we were playing, and my guitar player stopped and said, "You can sing." And I said, "Well, yeah, I can sing." And he goes, "Well, be the singer then." So I became the singer.
That was a great move
then,
on his
then
part.
It was kind of a surprise to me too, but you know, that's what I've been doing pretty heavily ever since.
I pose that question often when I'm talking singing with other vocalists because the topic fascinates me. And I'm one of those guys that was definitely not born with any special vocal talent. I was ridiculed and run out of town, more than one town, because I thought I was a singer. I felt like a singer. I just didn't sound like a singer. It was years of practice, hard work, teaching myself, taking lessons from Sabine, hundreds of gigs, dozens of sessions under pressure before I finally learned how to control my vocal instrument and focus my tone on what the songs really needed. I asked Sebastian Bach that same question. Was it talent or tenacity?
What a great question. Obviously, you're born with the set of vocal cords that you're born with, but if I don't sing, my voice goes away. Like, I need to sing every day properly, like not sing from the throat or sing wrong. I mean, warm up my voice with scales and sing along to my favorite songs. It's just like a muscle, as you know. And if you don't use your muscle, you're going to get weak. And like, you know, maybe as a fluke, I could go sing for a night. But if you're talking about going on the road and playing every single night, that's the difference between being a professional singer and just a fan. As you know, Ron, there's a big difference between singing every single night and singing like on the weekend or something like that with your buddies.
It does. That gritty, gravelly, high screaming tone that you do and that I've done, it does take its toll on the voice, and you sound just as fresh and strong as ever, man.
You know, I try to come from a clean place vocally. I try to attack a note. I try to hit a note cleanly, and then like a little rasp will come in, but a little gravel and a little rasp goes a long way. For me, the money sound of my vocals is when I sing clean, like "I Remember You" or 18 in Life, that clean tone. But I like the dirty sound too. But I try to fit the words and the sound of the voice to the song. You know what I mean? Like to me, the best guy at that was Rob Halford when he would sing a song
Absolutely.
Like Desert Plains. When he would sing a song like Desert Plains, it would really sound like you're riding on a motorbike on the desert plains. I don't know how he did that, but he was very, very good at that. And yeah. So I try to kind of fit the lyrics and the sound of the voice to the song itself.
One of my all-time favorite interviews was with Jimmy Jameson from Survivor. He was instrumental in their big comeback in 1984 with the album Vital Signs. He earned a lot of well-deserved acclaim for his tone, pitch, and delivery. Legendary DJ Casey Kasem called him The Voice. Since the 80s, we've all heard Jimmy's voice on countless TV commercials and radio jingles. Budweiser's Real Men of Genius was one among many, and I asked him about that. He was such a great singer and a really nice, down-to-earth guy.
Hey, Ron, it's a pleasure to be here from one singer to another.
Oh, thanks, man, so much. And being a singer myself, I've been a big fan of your work since you first joined Survivor on the 1984 album Vital Signs. That record had some monster hits, was in heavy rotation in my vehicles. High on You, The Search is Over. Your tone with those tunes was a perfect combination, man. When, as you were growing up and in your childhood, when did you realize that you were a singer?
Just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, right. Finally, all that hard work and practice really did pay off for you, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, when I first started singing the band, they were bringing a little tape recorder in, they'd tape it, you know, and when they played it back, I'd leave the room because I didn't want to hear myself because, you know, the first time you ever hear yourself on tape, you're just kind of strange, you know, and I don't know, I guess I figured out I could sing when I could. They took up a collection for us one time, and we made $5 each. And I, wow, we get paid for doing this? We must be okay, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, some guys are born with it, man. You know, some guys are born with it. Some guys like myself, we have to work our asses off to get it. How much of your tone came from practice and hard work, or how much came as a result, basically, of divine intervention?
Well, my mom was a really good singer. I only heard her sing in church, but she was a really good singer. And my grandfather was a fiddle player, so and I had a couple of good uncles guitar players, so we had musicians kind of around in the family. But as far as just outright out and out singers, I didn't really have anybody to follow after or to teach me anything, and so I just kind of hard knocked it, you know, and did it like you did, you know. We would do copy songs, and I tried to sound like the person who was singing it, and we did that so much over the years, 4 hours a night, you know. You start to develop your own thing. You never sound like the person you're trying to sing like, but you think you are, and you know, and that develops, and you try to sound like somebody else, like Paul Rogers or somebody like that, you know, and it just. You form your own style, and you finally learn, and you listen to all these guys on the records when you're learning and their licks and stuff, and it's pretty much the same way you did it, I'm sure.
A lot of people don't realize that there are different challenges to being a singer, performing live as opposed to cutting tracks in the studio, and also trying to deliver the message behind the lyrics of the song.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of things that enter into that, making that pot of stew, you know. You do them differently. You do them differently live than you do in the studio. Because in the studio, you have to work the mic. You have to, you know. It's so focused. And when you're playing live, you know, you're out there and you're getting down and you're going for it, you know. And as long as you can hear yourself, and as long as you can hear at least some of the keyboards, so you can get the pitch of the song, you know, and sing it in tune.
Yeah, capturing those magic moments, man. That's what it's all about in the studio. Capturing something, that vibe, that attitude, that feeling and emotion that's going to live on, exactly. And people will still relate to it 30 years later.
You said emotion, that you hit the nail on the head.
Well, you once sang it and said it best. It's the singer, not the song. If I'm wrong, I apologize, but I could swear I've heard your voice on a lot of TV and radio commercials through the years. Am I right, or are the big corporations just hiring guys that sound like you on purpose?
No, you have. You have. I sang jingles for, gosh, a long, long time. And then, as a matter of fact, there was a jingle company here in town called the Tanner Company that I went in to substitute for this guy for 4 days, and I stayed there 4 years, and I sang jingles from 8:30 in the morning till 7:30 at night, and the rest of the local group would leave at 3:30, and I'd stay till 7:30 and keep singing all day long. And that really taught me a lot about the studio, more than I actually thought I already knew everything about it, you know. But so it's wrong.
Wow, that's a tough gig, man. That's a tough gig.
It is, because I mean, you have to, in that situation, you have to sing it like that. You think the person who's buying that commercial wants it to sound like, you know, and that's a pretty challenging situation a lot of times, you know.
Just 1 year after that conversation, Jimmy Jameson died of a stroke. I'm really glad I got the chance to talk singing with him. During his tenure with Judas Priest, he was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Metal Performance, a veteran of many albums and projects, including The Three Tremors, a vocal triple threat, which also features my buddy Sean Peck from Cage, and Harry the Tyrant Conklin. You've heard him scream. Now let's talk the rock with my special guest, Tim Ripper Owens. Hello, Ripper. How are you?
Hey, good, Ron. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. Really excited to have you on the show. You're a little younger than I am, and things are different now. Fans can see us and hear us on YouTube and podcasts and radio shows like this one, but back in the day, I remember calling people and saying, hello, this is Ron Keel, and they'd say, no, you're not. Prove it. Scream for me. And I'd have to let loose a scream to identify myself. Does that ever happen to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're 100% right, though. Things are totally different. I mean, you know, now they know what you've eaten for breakfast on social media. So it's, you know, I remember watching you guys. I remember watching Keel and I think it was Saxon, Helix, and Keel in Cleveland. And it was a totally different era. I mean, you know, you would only see the rock stars in magazines or be able to hear them, you know, on the radio or MTV. You didn't know everything about them. So you get it. Now people still want to hear that. You know, they want to hear the screams and they want you to do it. They're like, is it really you? And, you know, prove it. And I'm like, I don't even know. I don't even know how you want me to prove it, man.
Man, you would probably blow up my headphones, so I'm not going to ask you to do it. I know it's you. I'm betting that most of my mainstream listeners are familiar with the legend of Ripper Owens as it applies to your history with Priest. Introduce everyone to the Three Tremors.
Here's the funny thing, Ron. When we record the records for the Three Tremors, I do the whole record. Like Sean does it, he sends it to me. Then I sing the whole record. Then they split it up when they mix it and do it. So when we go to rehearse or get ready for a tour, it's like, well, what am I, you know, I got to go back and listen to the record because I don't even know what part you gave me to sing. So it's really, it's harder than getting ready for a normal tour when you know the whole song. But he had this idea and he wanted to make it original. And, you know, on this tour, I don't think we're playing any covers. We might throw in like Heaven and Hell to celebrate Ronnie James Dio, but, you know, it's craziness and, you know, three classic metal singers singing high notes and, it's more high notes on this record than I probably sang in 10 years. So it's wow. It's craziness. I did the KK's Priest record, and we actually finished it right before COVID lockdown. So this is really Sean's baby, and he writes these songs, and he'll send a song to me. You know, it's totally different than the days of going in the studios. I mean, you can just sit and make, especially being a singer. You know how it's so much easier for us to record in our house. I mean, we could set up a mic and equipment anywhere in the house and just sing away. So it's kind of easy. It's fun to do. I mean, you know, during lockdown, I was just joking with someone else. I think I recorded 5 albums last year, to be honest. I was like, because I couldn't tour, and that's how I make my living is doing solo tours, is I had people saying, "Well, you want to sing on my record?" And I'm like, "Yeah, okay." Next thing I know, I'm not joking. I think I did 5 albums for different people,
yeah.
All different records too. So it's luckily I was able to do that. But
You are a busy dude, man. You're a busy cat. We'll plug some of those other projects, but I want to go back to the approach that you took with this album and all of the Three Tremors recording sessions. A lot of people may not realize this, but I know how it is when you're doing vocals with other people, whether it's a duet or a trio like you guys. Each guy in the band records his own version of the song, and then in the mixing process, they'll take lines and phrases from each guy and kind of blend it together. You've got another new release called The Solo Versions, a 3-disc collection with each of you singing your own versions of the same album. Is that the debut album or the new album, Guardians of the Void?
That was the debut album, and I love the solo. And it's really, I should have figured Sean. Once Sean heard all of our versions, he was like, I think I'm going to release, you know, the solo versions, which I like. I actually like the solo versions better than I do the record because it had a better flow to me. Why not? And the funny thing is, Ron, is I didn't change anything. Like, when he put the solo version out, it was exactly what I did from the start. This time, I'd like, if it's going to be a solo version, I'd actually like to, you know, maybe add a few things or change a few things so it's a little bit different. But what people hear is what we sang, you know. So I'm sure, I mean, Sean's got, on this new one we've released, he's got different album covers. You know, you'll be like, this is the first album cover you're getting. Now pretty soon it's going to change to a new one. I mean, he's marketing. He's thinking of all that stuff. And I got to say, the greatest thing about the Three Tremors is it's not a project where we don't hit the road and tour compared to a lot of things I do and a lot of things all of us do. This is a touring band. Whether it's in front of 50 people or whether it's in front of 2,000 people, we'll be out there, you know, doing these shows and doing this.
Ripper, dude, I see this tour schedule, man. You guys are grinding it out sometimes 5 and 6 nights in a row and toss in all the travel. That's a heavy load on the body and especially on the pipes, man.
It really is. Obviously, there's 3 singers, so I always say Harry seems to always be up. You know, I don't know if he ever has a vocal problem. He's like he's got pipes of steel there, man, his yeah. voice, and mine's like paper. I got to be very careful with mine. So I, you know, it's like get a lot of sleep. Even though there's 3 singers, this is more brutal of singing than most of the stuff. I mean, it's constantly just high. Like I said, I like singing some high notes. You know, like when I was in Judas Priest, it wasn't a lot of singing whole songs of high notes. It was just high notes. Yeah. Like, you know, the song will go on and you hit a high note. This is just singing high stuff.